Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Bets are amazing, 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 amazing.
There's a fly ball hit out to left. Waiting is Jones. The Mets are the world champions.
Here's the 1-2 pitch. Check him out. Seva has 19 strikeouts.
Swung on, hit on the ground towards first.
Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run. Mike Piazza. And the Mets lead 3-2.
To left field. Floyd. And after running roughshod over the National League, the Mets have a title to show for it. 2006 National League East champions.
Here's the payoff pitch from Familia to Fowler on the way. And it's in there. Strike three called. The Mets win the pennant. The New York Mets have won the National League pennant. Put it in the books.
It's another edition of the Mets Podcast here on this Tuesday, November the 27th, 2018. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. Welcome back, everybody. I'm throwing in another podcast short here on this Tuesday. I promise I'm working on a full show. I'm working on a guest. I'm hoping to have something and have a spot before the winter meetings. But the reason why I'm coming to you, and I wasn't planning on doing something until the weekend, but the rumor mill is a churning, and it looks like post-Thanksgiving some things are starting to percolate. And there was a little bit too much smoke around the rumor that came out earlier today, or maybe late yesterday, about not so much the Mariners shopping Robinson Cano. I think everybody knows that the Mariners are looking to cut payroll. They've already traded their catcher. They traded James Paxton, Mike Zunino, and James Paxton, and it looks like maybe they're not in full blown Miami Marlins fire sale, but they're in a fire sale nonetheless to a certain degree. And Robinson Cano falls into that. And when I initially heard that the Mets were interested, my initial reaction was yuck. Really yuck. Because guy was just suspended for PEDs. He's well north of 30. He's actually 35. I hadn't seen him play consistently. When you're out on the West Coast, especially when you're out in the Pacific Northwest, you might as well not even be in the United States. And from an East Coast baseball perspective, you just don't stay up I personally don't spend a lot of time staying up to watch Seattle Mariners games. We're focused on the National League. We're focused on the National League East. We're focused on the Mets. So you kind of lose connection. Even if you play fantasy baseball or try to keep up with the league, you lose contact with, really what's going on sometimes. But you're not connected to it like you are with your National League East players and your National League players. So my first reaction was yuck. And I figured it was another speculative type of hot stove rumor. Now, Andy Martino, who's been reporting a lot of the Noah Syndergaard trade interest, and really what it is, it's not that the Mets are aggressively shopping Syndergaard, they're just putting him out there and saying, what can we get, has been reporting now on the Cano situation. And it seems like his reports indicate that the Mets are aggressively exploring it. Now, what's important to know with all these rumors, and it's been a big part of the reporting so far this year, and I don't know if it's a mindset change in the rumor mill or how these reporters want to cover themselves, but they're adding from information that they're sourced about what the Mets or the Mariners may be looking to do, they're adding what may be a little bit of their own opinion into that. So it's hard to say what the rumor has been and what I'm about to talk about, how real it is, other than there may be some smoke, or as John Heyman of FanCred said, there's smoke but not fire. But there's enough here for us to talk about. So, like I said, it was like, yuck, Robinson Cano, really, what are the Mets thinking here? But I started to really dive into the details of the deal. So now it appears what the Mariners are trying to do is get rid of Cano, who's owed $24 million even across the board over the next 5 years. So you're looking at about $125 million over 5 years. They're looking potentially to attach a younger player. And some of the names that have come up are, the closer, Edwin Diaz, which would be a huge coup for the Mets, a really top-notch, maybe the best closer in baseball right now. Marco Gonzalez, a starting pitcher, mid-20s, not as excited about him, but he's someone who can fill out the back half of the rotation, potentially a left-hander, has some potential. And then an outfielder, Mitch Haniger, which, believe it or not, the Mets actually drafted out of high school in 2009. He didn't sign. He wound up going to Milwaukee and, later on in 2012 and subsequently the Arizona Diamondbacks and then the Mariners. And he was actually involved in a deal. He was in the Segura trade that they made back in 2016. So he's been around a couple of years. Got some power, profiles as a corner outfielder, things like that. Now, the other part of that, which has been reported, is that the Mets would potentially want Seattle to take on Jay Bruce's contract. And it validates a little bit that what I was hoping that Brody Van Wagenen would see is that I think the Mets are best as a team with Nimmo in right playing every day and Conforto in left and then figuring out some kind of solution in center, hopefully that involves a bit of defense. Now, Haniger, although he's has played some center field, and the metrics aren't kind to him on center field, the defensive metrics, which you have to take with a grain of salt, seems to be profiles more, or most of his experience is as a corner player. So, that might not fit in terms of, what they want to do in center, but he's a right-handed bat. Maybe he could complement and get some time if they were to acquire someone like him. Because you have two lefties in the corners. But ultimately, the deal starts out with Jay Bruce for Robinson Cano. And I want to go back to when I set up the offseason and I talked about potentially the Mets going after, and why I'm changing my tune a little bit here, going after Robinson Cano. I'm going to put the PEDs aside for a minute, because statistically, he has been pretty good, even at age of 35. I mean, his numbers last year and the time he was out on the field were as good as they've ever been, and most of it at his career norms. So I can't really complain about that. But if you remember correctly, I said one of the things I'd like the Mets to do is to bring in Daniel Murphy, and Murphy to be profiles more at the corners, a guy who could move around a little bit, hit a little bit, potentially give you some of a hedge at first base, because it sounds like Van Wagenen is high on Alonso, and I think he should be, and you know, he may be looking for a lefty complement to Alonso for, you know, maybe some to spell or a veteran to spell him a little bit at first base. But, and Murphy to me really fits that. However, if Cano is available, and it's debatable whether at this point in his career, you know, they're both careers intersect, or maybe they're similar hitters. But defensively, I think Cano doesn't have a knee injury. He's not coming off a serious knee injury like Murphy. Offensively, Cano is always better, but Murphy has certainly closed the gap over the last couple of years. But I think Cano has played a little bit of third last year, a little bit of first. Again, I didn't see him enough. I know the metrics aren't kind to him, but there's not enough of a sample size for that to be relevant. You know, Cano could be your starting second baseman. He could maybe move around the field a little bit if you need him at third, and certainly if you need to give him some rest, but you want to get his bat in the lineup, you could move him to first and spell Alonso a little bit if Alonso winds up winning the job. You know, this is very interesting. This, you know, starts to percolate a little bit. This starts to make me think, well, you know, you're bringing in a guy that's going to give you power, plays a pretty good second base, now is starting to expand his game later in his career to play the corners, was an all-star just a couple of years ago, has been a gold glover. Yes, he had the PED suspension. However, you know, long range, he had all those clean tests for 12, 13 years of his career. And what he did get suspended for was a masking agent, something that apparently, from what I understand, is a drug that you or I could be prescribed by a doctor. Now, he had the doctor down in the Dominican prescribe it. You know, he did admit to taking it. Why is he using a masking agent? Who the heck knows? I know there's been speculation because he was on the Yankees and he was friendly with Melky Cabrera. He was friendly with A-Rod back in the day. You know, that there's maybe there's some smoke and fire there. But, you know, listen, he played well enough last year even when he came back. And I'll actually bring up his stats in a minute when he came back, where I really don't think it was a situation where all of a sudden he came back and he fell off the cliff. Yeah, I mean, he was as good as ever in September, October. He had a 343 batting average, 930 OPS at the end of the year. So you're getting yourself, hopefully, a very good offensive player, and you're really only increasing the payroll $10 million a year because Jay Bruce is scheduled to make $14 million. What you're really doing, and what may be part of this, or maybe part of the thinking by Brody Van Wagenen, is that you're taking Jay Bruce, who right now doesn't fit. It's an awkward, clumsy fit. Jay Bruce doesn't really want to play first. Sure, he can be that lefty complement to Alonso at first, but you're going to pay $14 million a year for Jay Bruce to probably only play a couple times a week. The plantar fasciitis in his foot scares the heck out of me. He played a lousy outfield last year. And most importantly, and I supported the Jay Bruce signing, so I'm going to say I was wrong. I figured it was a short-term deal for 3 years. The money was right. I really liked what I saw out of him on his walk year. But I, you know, clearly, and I guess that doesn't necessarily come up in physical, the plantar fasciitis is an issue. But I also felt like he had a bit of warning track power last year. And what that could also indicate to me is that Bruce is just a tad bit slow. And if your bat slows down as a power guy, those balls that were making it over the fence all of a sudden die at the warning track and you become less effective out there. That's a concern. You know, as far as I know, that's not an issue with Robinson Cano. Now, I know what everyone's saying. Well, you know, the Mets need to go out. They need to go out and get Machado. This is not the big move. This is not the big player. I heard some people call into talk radio and compare it to Mo Vaughn. Guys, slow down. I know you got a lot of PTSD on this whole, you know, Mets bringing in older players. And I certainly, my first reaction was that. But there's nothing in his game statistically over the course of the last few years, and he didn't have a great 2016, but it wasn't bad, that tells me this guy can't play. And he's playing second base. Now, there is a concern at 35, how much of a step is he going to lose playing second base? But, you know, overall, Van Wagenen has represented him along with Roc Nation. He was one of the guys that helped get him that big contract in with Seattle. He probably knows him really well. I have faith that he's going out there and he's doing due diligence. Can this guy give? You know, he's got 5 years left on the deal, so that's a big deal. The guy's going to get paid till he's 40. But at some point, you know, if he's athletic enough, you know, does he get a first baseman's mitt and he's able to play the corners and get out of the middle infield and still contribute later in his career? And how much post-Bruce? And that's the real key. Because right now, you know, you could probably get Seattle to work something out. Or Seattle might say, hey, you know, part of this deal, if we're going to give you Diaz, who would be the real coup of the deal, is you got to take on a little extra payroll for us because we need to save some money in the next couple of years, and Bruce allows us to do that. But what about after Bruce is supposed free agent? You don't want the Mets to pick up the whole $24 million. That's where all of a sudden, in the later part of his career, you're not paying, because Robbie Cano is probably not going to be a full-time player in 3 or 4 years. If he is, God bless him. You're not paying $24, $25 million. You tell the Mariners to pick up 50% of it or a little bit more of that, or maybe you do some kind of sliding scale. Having an agent as a GM helps a lot, because I'm sure that's something he's going to be able to negotiate and figure out. And hopefully, I think one of the reasons why they hired him was because he's going to be able to manage the payroll and not put the Mets in a bad situation 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. You don't want to make yourself forget about tomorrow. You want to be responsible so that you have flexibility, because you don't know what the team's needs are or where they're going to be in 3, 4, 5 years. And something like this could hamstring them. So, but to me, there's really not a lot of negatives. When you're talking about swapping a Bruce for a Cano, I think as much as there's still a risk because of Cano's age, and the only other part of that risk is Cano to me has always come across as a sleepy player. And I don't know if that's what I want the Mets to incorporate, because one of the things I want them to do is have energy and have grinders, and McNeil really showed that. You have Nimmo, who has a lot of energy. Alonso seems to have a really great attitude. You want to continue to incorporate players in here that are high energy, professional. You know, go out there and really put everything out there in a focus and a determination every day. Mickey Callaway's talked about culture. I'm guessing that they've put their due diligence on there. And look, this is a guy who played a long time for the Yankees. And the Yankees punted on signing him after 2013 because that was a big contract. And I think the Yankees, after A-Rod, especially because that's in the midst of all the A-Rod steroid nonsense, they were like, I'm going to give another guy into his 40s a contract and be stuck paying this tab towards the back end of this, which is essentially what's happening to Seattle. And the Mets could be the beneficiary, because you don't want to pay a guy with 20, 38, 39, 40, $24, $25 million. Mets aren't going to have to if the Mariners are going to pay a big portion of that. And $10, $12 million for a veteran bat that could probably still hit is not a bad deal. Now, that's if you're just looking in the vacuum one for one. I think the other part of this, and where you may be even more inclined to take on a Cano, is if you could pull off bringing in the closer. Now, Edwin Diaz, again, a guy out in the Pacific Northwest. I'm not watching a ton of him. He was on my fantasy team, so I know the guy's good, for whatever that counts to you guys. High strikeout guy. We're talking about 15 strikeouts per 9 innings. When you're north of 10 is normal these days. Everybody's doing 8, 9, 10 these days. Everyone's striking everyone out. When you're in the 15 range, that means you're in the elite. 15 per 9 and walking two batters per 9, it's not like you're walking like K-Rod when he was doing 13, 14. K-Rod was walking 3, 4, 5 batters per 9 innings. Those are insane numbers. That's way too many walks. That's good command. That's good control. He's not allowing runners on base. He's getting swings and misses. And that's what you want out of your closer. You want to lock these games down. And how do you lock games down? Nobody makes contact. When nobody makes contact, more than likely you're going to win, because they're not going to get on base. And you're not going to even have the threat of an error or the old, did you get BABIP? Did you get to the batting average on ball in play? Did the ball take a bad bounce? So, you know, to me, that's the win here. Would Seattle do this? That's the real tough question. A closer, an elite closer like Diaz, probably could fetch them a decent deal out there. But at the end of the day, what's most important? If they're in rebuilding mode, if they're rebuilding and they're in this fire sale thing, and if finances are important, you may have to suck it up and say, look, I have this elite closer. I really want to get Cano off the books. I want to save money. I don't want to pay as much in years, that, you know, 3, 4, 5 years after the you know, let's say they take on a salary like Bruce. You know, maybe the Mets will pick up more in those latter years. And the way we sell them on that is like, we're giving you Diaz. Now, the Mets going to have to give up something of value out of their farm system, a prospect. I'm guessing they do. I don't know how they view some of the top 10. A Jimenez, a Justin Dunn, a Peterson, an Anthony Kay. I'd be careful about giving up arms. I'd be curious what they think and what they would do and what they would attach to it. But overall, assuming that there's not too much pain or too much craziness attached to it with respect to a prospect or a guy on the big league club, I think you got to really consider this deal. And I know this is crazy because I know what you're saying. There's some of you out there saying, oh my God, where have you gone, Mike? Are you trying to advocate for the Mets taking a step back? Are you advocating for the Mets to do another move? And I know what some of you are already saying. Manny Machado, why don't they just go after Machado? I'm telling you guys, I'm going to sit here and tell you this. You don't want to sign a guy to a 10-year deal. If you were telling me Robbie Cano from 5 years ago and the Mets were interested in him, and I remember having this dialogue on Champions Radio, ESPN Radio, Long Island, when I had that show, that weekend watchdog morning show there, I was not in favor of giving him a 10-year deal. I am not in favor of signing guys to 10-year deals. And normally with a Manny Machado, I would be, but a guy who has a serious knee history problem, has had some questionable work ethic issues when it comes to what you've heard about him with hustling, a guy who's a dirty player, a guy who, you know what, if he's going to continue to be a dirty player, is eventually going to get himself hurt, and a guy who's got a bad knee, and let's face it, had a bit of a career year to date, what you saw over the last 12 months. Cano has been a consistent offensive player. And also, by the way, Cano has been a better offensive player in his career than Manny Machado on a consistency basis. So you are getting Manny Machado. You're not getting him at 26. You're getting an offensive player who, to me, can be the equal of Manny Machado in a lot of ways. Does not play the elite shortstop position. Defensively, he's not playing a gold glove third base. Can't be an elite shortstop, so there is more of a value with Machado. But look at it that way. And again, I know you might be laughing. You say you're apologizing. You're trying to rationalize it. I do not believe signing Manny Machado to a 10-year deal makes financial sense. I also don't think it makes sense for Bryce Harper. Those guys, to me, they are very, very good players. They are not worth committing to 10 years. 10 years is a long time. And the back end of those contracts are real hell. You're seeing the Seattle Mariners and what they're trying to do here. You want to keep contracts short. You can compete next year, and it doesn't necessarily require you to sign one of those two players. So that's real important. And I also want to offer you context and perspective. I'll wrap up with this point because it's real important to get the context and the perspective when it comes to reporting. The Atlanta Braves signed Brian McCann and Josh Donaldson. And they were all, I haven't heard anybody really, maybe Joel Sherman a little bit in his column in the New York Post, not criticize it, but give you some of the caveats. Everybody loves the deal. Josh Donaldson has had a bunch of injuries, including shoulder injuries, which are, last I looked, when you play third base, a death knell. He played well for Cleveland down the stretch after he was traded, but it's been about 2 years since Josh Donaldson has really been the player that the name is... brings up. You know, Josh Donaldson, the name, he has not been an elite offensive player in a couple of years. Brian McCann is more of a clubhouse guy, part-time catcher, local guy. He's a good guy to have in your club, but he's not the Brian McCann that signed the contract with the Yankees 5 years ago. He's not that guy. Those are good component pieces. Now, Donaldson could be more than that, but at his age, there's no guarantee. If the Mets made that move, believe me, there'd be a lot of skepticism. Well, look at the Mets. They're signing these old players. And what makes them think that Donaldson, even though he had a nice little run there with Cleveland, will be back to the old Donaldson. They're signing a guy past his prime. But the Braves do it, and it's great. So to me, it's real important to look in context. You can throw cold water on just about anything. What the Mets are doing or exploring it with the situation with Robinson Cano and the Mariners is really no different than what the Braves are doing or have done with Josh Donaldson. It's just going to cost them a little bit more. There's a bigger commitment. Donaldson's a one-year commitment. But perhaps there's a way you can bridge the gap, make it where if you do still get an Edwin Diaz, still get something of value, you don't have to be irresponsible financially in the back half or the last three, four, five on the Cano contract. So at the beginning I said, yuck to Robbie Cano. Do not do not Robbie Cano. I go think about, oh my God, John Sterling came to my mind with Robbie Cano, what do you know? Don't do Robbie Cano. Don't bring Robbie Cano to Flushing. Upon further review, as more I look at it, seeing some of the names that Seattle might be willing to attach, especially the fact they're willing to give a closer, an elite closer, it's something I think you definitely need to consider. Consider it seriously. And I'm looking forward to, as the next few days and weeks into the winter meetings transpire, what could happen, because I'm a lot more excited about potentially acquiring a Robbie Cano and improving the offense than I am about anything I hear about what teams are willing or not willing to do when it comes to trading Noah Syndergaard. Not, as I said in the last podcast, I'm not as pumped about that. And I will continue to say the Mets should not trade any of their starting pitching. And that includes if it needs to be part of making this deal happen, because then it changes the whole complexity or the whole appetite I have for this kind of situation. But right now, that doesn't seem to be the case based on the reports that are out there. Hey, that'll be it. Wanted to jump in, give my two cents on the Robbie Cano rumors. Hope you enjoyed this Talking Mets short. Of course, you can check me out all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can give the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you could rate me on iTunes, leave me a review, very much appreciated. As of today, 4 out of 5 stars on iTunes. That's very appreciated by you guys. I'm glad you enjoyed the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva, and enjoy the rest of your week. I'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast over the weekend. Talk to you soon, everyone.
Meet the Mets. Head for the park.